The opinions stated in this podcast do not reflect the opinions of the Elestal or SIUE as a whole. Welcome back to the Elestal After Hours. I'm Hannah Ledford, and joining me today I have...
Managing Editor Bruce Arnau.
Brandy Spann, Opinion Editor.
As I'm sure we're all aware, there have been a lot of protests on campuses all around the country. And Bruce, you were at one.
I was at Washington University's campus. They had a encampment like all the other sort of protests around the country.
Did you go as wanted to participate, or you just wanted to see what was up or what was going on?
I kind of wanted to see what was going on because I almost didn't even bring my camera. I was going to just leave it at home. And then just go through and walk through, probably not on the front or anything. I was probably just gonna chill in the back and just see what everybody was doing. And last minute, I was just yeah, I'm gonna bring my camera. And then I was there from beginning to end. It lasted 7 hours or something. Around 8 or 9 is whenever the police finally broke it up entirely, that day at least. No, I wasn't really going there to cover it until I got there. And then afterwards, they released an email about it, and I went and checked up on their policy, and there was it just kind of seemed they were making stuff up to be hey, it was justifiable to break up this protest. Mm-hmm. And only one of the things in their policy really made sense, and that's not dispersing when somebody tells you to, when an authority figure tells you to. That one is something they didn't do. But they were saying the protests had a threat of harm or something, and they called it a very sad, dark day for Washington University. Didn't seem like that most of the time when I was there.
Just at the end.
This is something I've been telling everybody about this protest. The weather has been weird, and the weather was weird on that day. At the beginning of the protest, it was cloudy. During their speeches and gathering in the park, the sun came out, and then they started marching. Got back to clean and cloudy. They get into the center of the campus near the George Washington statue, and the sun comes through again. And then the police come and then break up their first encampment near the statue, and then it starts to rain for the first time that day. Mm. And then once they move the encampment, it stops raining, and then an hour or so later, the sun comes back when a group of Muslims start to pray in the field in between the cops and the encampment. I see the sun poke through. I edited one of the photos I took to highlight the sun showing up. It got dark, but when the protest ended fully, the encampment was over, I was standing on the sidewalk. All of a sudden it just started to pour rain, and I had to take out my umbrella. And a few minutes later, the cops drove by and were taunting all the protesters on the sidewalk, honking their horns, laughing at them, and just shouting stuff at them. And then as I was walking away, I could see lightning in the distance with no thunder. And it was just a really weird weather thing that day that feels coincidentally ended up being very symbolic mm-hmm. for the protest.
Yeah. Do you think it was an act of God?
Maybe. It was weird that it came through when they were praying, because I just don't remember, because I would see the photos change because the lighting would change. It went from being overcast with really bad lighting to all of a sudden they have the sun shining on them. And it just didn't happen too often throughout. So I don't know. That's I've just been beautiful. Saying that a lot because yeah. It was just, that's all I could think about when I was leaving the protest.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Divine intervention.
Yeah.
For sure.
Can we talk about the SIUE professor? Able to.
Steve Tamara, yeah. I think he wants people to talk about it because there's footage of his arrest. Tamari was at the front of the encampment when the police first started moving towards the protesters. Everybody at the encampment was recording, basically. If they weren't holding arms on the front, in front of the encampment, they were recording, the whole thing. And Tamari is recording as well, and he goes in to record an arrest of one of the encampment members. And you can see him walk up behind the cops with his phone, and then the cops turn around and shove him away, and then he backs up into two other cops. Mm-hmm. They grab him and then throw him to the ground, take him away. I don't know if I said this, but the video's a bit viral. I saw it on Twitter, and it had like 600,000 views when I saw it. Dylan Hembro, editor-in-chief, he said he saw it on like Reddit last night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, real big stuff there. But it's just been everywhere, it seems, because it's he's a now retired professor, I think, after this semester. I don't know if he is now because he still has to do finals. Mm-hmm. But after this semester, he's retired. And I just had a class with him last week. I had a history of the Ottoman Empire with him this semester. So it was weird for me to see him get arrested. But I think it was even like worse for an outside perspective to see an older guy just all of a sudden get thrown to the ground like that for doing nothing but record. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very clear he had no other intentions going that close than to just record what was happening. I could have made that mistake when taking photos.
Yeah.
And I could have just easily has been arrested. Anybody could have. To think he got arrested in that manner, in that sort of violent way, is just really, like, disgusting, I guess.
It does take a certain amount of force to, like, put someone on the ground, but the videos that have been going everywhere, it's excessive.
I mean, you see, like, the same photos in, like, of a war prisoner or something. Like, they take that kind of caution with somebody that's been shooting at them. But this guy, my professor, Tamari, was just, I don't want to say shooting video, but I didn't want to make that joke. But he was just filming, and then they took that level to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they did that with most of every other protester there. If they didn't, like, just put their hands behind their back and then stop, they, like, threw them to the ground. I have a picture of one person. There was the St. Louis Public Radio video. There's a guy getting in that exact way. He's getting his feet picked up and yanked out. I had a picture of him getting water before. And then just a few minutes later, I have a photo of him looking, like, mangled on the ground because of how the police are, like, pulling him out. They had him on the ground, and his legs were behind him, and he was, like, reaching out for something. Like, he was just had his arms everywhere. He was just sprawled. And then you can see the cops, like, moving him around. Like, if you got arrested, that's more than likely how they treated you. And they didn't care, really, who it was. I saw a bunch of other photographers nearly get arrested. The only way they didn't is, like, if they just showed their camera and, like, backed up with their hands up. And, like, just showed, like, hey, I'm backing up. I'm not in this. Don't arrest me. They were, I think, arresting anybody. I had another picture. This guy may have been a hobbyist photographer. He got too close trying to get photos. Cops were almost about to grab onto him. He does the same thing, backs up, and then backs away. That was the only way they didn't get arrested.
So how did you not get arrested if you were there hanging out?
I think I almost did, because there were a few times where I got way too close. There definitely could have been times where I was being way cautious. I would only go in for, like, as close photos if I was, like, sure there weren't any cops around. I wasn't even then, though, still too cognizant of my surroundings, because there were times where there was cops around me. I think I had a few cops, like, either reach for me or tell me to leave or do that sort of thing. But, I mean, I could have been. If I was in the wrong place at the wrong moment, they could have just picked me up and got me out. There was another time where I was on the right side of the group, and on the left side, there was a person running. I don't know what they did. I heard that they, like, either stole a helmet or hit somebody or did something. And I run from the right side to the left side to try and get photos of it. There's this guy standing in front of the encampment with the Palestine flag, and yells out, "Don't run." And I turn around and I say thanks to this one, and then I, like, stop, and I just keep walking. And I don't get any photos. I don't even see who it was. I get a few photos of the cops trying to run after them, but they didn't want me to run. And I think the reason is that the cops would have assumed I was involved in it, and they could have, like, tackled me, or they could have taken me into custody.
There are so many, like, not rules you have to follow, but things you have to be very, very careful about.
Yeah.
And it sounds like everybody kind of was, like, aware of how dangerous this could have ended up being.
Mm-hmm. I tried to include this in the article, but they said to everybody, like, we're not going to interact with instigators. Don't drink. Don't smoke. We're trying to make it as, like, legal as possible to do this. Because when instigators come, people get into their emotions a lot. All of a sudden, it becomes a violent display instead of a peaceful protest. And it could just be one person. They could not even be involved. I've heard, this may not entirely be true, This may still be a little piece of rumor in the moment with these campus protests, but I've heard that there have been instigators coming. They're not even in support of the protests, but then they'll cause violence and act as a supporter so that the narrative can be shifted towards violent protests instead of peaceful protests. And again, this may just be a rumor spreading around because we're still in the moment. We can't really look back on things and see what was true. And I think that these protesters did like an amazing job at remaining calm. A lot of the people that were not in support of the protests were behind the cops. I saw these two students, I'm assuming students at WashU, when the cops walked down the staircase for the first time and set up, they ran, like, were behind the cops, and they were just thanking all the cops for doing this. From what I could tell, there weren't too many counter-protesters, like, in the encampment, at least. There were always people, like, driving by, honking and calling them murderers and terrorists and things like that. But besides that, not much. So I don't know, had there been more, things would have been different, but in that moment, at least, the protesters were, like, very level-headed. They remained peaceful throughout, from what I could tell.
That seems to be a running theme in the protests all over the country.
Mm-hmm. They are very, I don't know, like, it's very dramatic how the cops are acting all the time with this stuff. Like, in UT Austin, all the cops look like they're in the military at this point.
Yeah.
And some of them have rifles. There's been I forget which university, but there's a university where there were snipers on the roof.
Oh my God.
Is that Ohio?
Was it Ohio? Because there was a picture of it that I saw, it was probably on Twitter, of just a person with a sniper rifle on the roof. And
that
they're saying
they've insane.
Rifles trained on the people just to see, and in case, I guess, anything happens, I don't know. In that email that WashU sent out to its students, they listed the injuries of the police. And they said three police were, I think it was, severely injured as a result of the protest. And no mention, I guess, of the protesters that may have been injured as well. Because I didn't see any incidents where the police were, like, attacked, really. But there was no mention of protesters that could have been injured. Because I just feel like it's very difficult to slam a person on the ground and not injure them,
mm-hmm.
especially in the way that cops have to arrest people, where they, like, put their arms, their full weight onto certain parts of their bodies, and everybody is different in what they can take. There may be some people that are just not as
resilient,
not as resilient as others. An older person is not as resilient as a younger person. Despite that, older people were still arrested just the same as college students. They could have been injured just as well. No mention of that, though. But, you know, three cops were apparently severely injured.
I think that's really weird to, like, highlight injuries for, like, police officers, because isn't that part of their job? Not, like, part of their job, but, like, not, like, out of the ordinary for them. Like, I think it's weird for a university to address a protest and, like, mention cops getting injured, because that almost feels like they're trying to, like, shape the narrative and make it seem more violent than it was.
Right, and that also paints the cops as more of a vulnerable group. Like, you should feel bad because these people got hurt, which I would feel bad if anybody got hurt.
Yeah.
But, to pick and choose who you're going to talk about like that.
Well, cops tend to be more, I don't know if, like, privilege is the right word, but when describing these things, they have a higher status than other people.
Yeah.
And that's, like, I think the first thing I thought when I read that, it's just cops are just treated differently when these things happen. There's laws in other countries where resisting arrest isn't a crime because resisting arrest is, like, natural, kind of, for a human being. And the way I described it to somebody is, like, imagine some stranger comes up to you, picks you up, grabs you, throws you on the ground, puts your hands behind your backs, handcuffs you, picks you up, and then takes you to, like, a place you don't know anything about. Like some foreign place. And then you're just supposed to accept that. You're just supposed to be like, yeah, okay, I'll go with this. If that was done by anybody that wasn't in a uniform and that didn't have a badge, you'd fight them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would attack them to protect yourself. But in America, that's a crime to do against cops. And resisting arrest there's a definition for it, but it can be very loose with what it is. There was a protester named Andrew. absolutely did not resist arrest. And I'm not going to say that he got charged with it or anything, but like his example of not resisting arrest to me is like something that you have to be very clear-headed for. He wasn't in the encirclement. He wasn't in the arm locks. He was standing off to the side. And so he had the ability to be like, okay, being arrested, he put his hands up, hands behind his back, and they arrested him. They didn't throw him to the ground. They just walked him away. Anybody in that encirclement couldn't have been that clear-headed, because you're staring down a line of cops that were just earlier shoving bikes into you and ripping people out, and you know what's coming. You're not going to be so level-headed whenever the cop is grabbing you and then pulling on you and then just doing all these sorts of things. So yes, you're going to resist. Anybody would in this situation, because that's just what you would do. We have a survival instinct that kicks in whenever we're afraid. And to criminalize that, I think, is just another one of the things that's just ridiculous about this country, is that you can't even resist something that's human to resist.
Yeah, because even just like naturally flinching away or like just pulling back just slightly out of fear or like nervousness, it just makes it really tough to be a protester.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which we have the right to do.
Is WashU is a public university, right?
I think it's private.
Oh.
It's really expensive to go there.
It's the college with the second richest parents in the world.
That makes sense.
Not world, the country. I don't know why I said world.
I think Chloe Wolf, our lifestyles editor, she told me once that St. Louis has the greatest like disparity of a city in the country. And you can really just see it like visually by just going down the street. And that even though a lot of these protesters may be from affluent people, in a way I feel like that may make it easier to protest, maybe alleviating some of the consequences, monetary. And I still think their goal is noble in what they're doing, because a lot of them aren't trying to draw attention to themselves. They're trying to draw attention to the war in Palestine. Mm-hmm. And it's something I've kind of been misstepping on, is really just focusing on these protests. It's like, oh my God, look at all this stuff happening. But then it's like, you know, they're doing all of this. They don't want to be named, really. They don't want to be seen, necessarily. They want to be seen when they're being arrested because they want to show what's happening with the cops. But they want the people viewing these protests to not forget what's happening in Palestine. They've been calling them disruptive protests and disruptive encampments because that's the point. It's supposed to, that's I guess the point of any protest, is to be disruptive. They're specifically doing college campuses, being very loud, very vocal all the time, drawing attention just so that we can't be normal. We can't see things and then move on and be like, yeah, things are good. Because there's just an ongoing murder of thousands of people. And the politicians here and in Israel are condemning these protests. They're saying they're anti-Semitic. They're saying they're, I think people are probably saying they're un-American. Meanwhile, the bombings are still going on. And then it's just something that these protesters are trying to highlight, is that we can't stop with this. You have to keep going and keep going and keep going until either something in this country budges. And then finally we can move in to alleviating the misery going on. It's a very important aspect of these protests that isn't really talked about so much, because I think it's, I don't know if it's really a shock, but it's something that's just so eye-catching, because there's so many comparisons being drawn to like the 60s counter-movement by students. And I definitely feel like that is something to be drawn in comparison to, but that really is very aesthetic, I think. It's an aesthetic way of looking at these protests as opposed to the demands and literal goals of the protests. It's like, oh, these are just like the 60s protests. But when you do that, all of the attention goes to the protests and not their message. And I guess that can be a problem with a lot of protests, like the George Floyd protests. I think it was a similar enough problem, where the highlight was the protests. And then you'd hear their message, but then you're like, oh man, these guys are like, there's a big crowd and they're watching down the city. They're angry, they're all this and all that. And then the message is drowned out over time until eventually it's forgotten about. And then you just remember that moment in the summer where all these people left their homes and then marched down the streets. And then you're like, oh yeah, it was the George Floyd protest. But then the issue was never solved. The issue was just forgotten about. And now we're seeing a sort of resurgence in the same things that these people were demanding. We've seen that it's only gotten worse. The police have only gotten more militarized. They've only gotten more violent. They've only gotten more oppressive towards people just trying to act in solidarity with people that are being murdered. And it's only gotten worse. And I think that is what happens when you focus on just the aesthetics of protests. When you focus on just like, oh, this is an awesome thing. And something I've kind of been messing up in with recently, but it's something that these protesters will always remind you about when you're there, is that's what they're there for.
It's kind of a lose-lose situation, because if you, you know, sit back and don't protest, nothing gets done. But if you do protest, it does kind of draw attention to a different aspect of, like, the cracks in our system. Yeah, I'm also guilty of that, because that's what I've been thinking about recently, too, is just paying close attention to what protests look like and how they, like, enact change or don't, rather than the actual major atrocity.
It's kind of like, well, what can we do about it when you just focus on sort of the atrocities happening? But then with these protests, I think they give some, they all have very clear demands and demands that can be met to alleviate that suffering, to at least hinder Israel's ability to kill so many people. Like the WashU protests, the encampment, one of their demands came after the week prior. I think they were demanding getting rid of the suspension of some of the students that were arrested and charged, or maybe not charged, but arrested in the last week protests. But then their other ones was divest from Boeing, because WashU apparently has a program where Boeing can come over and teach prospective employees or something of that type. They come to the campus and they just have like a sort of training program. And so the protesters said, cut ties with Boeing, because Boeing is making a lot of missiles that are being used in Gaza. Divest from Israeli educational programs to show that America does not support what is happening, that this university does not support what is happening, as a bit more of a symbolic gesture than anything else, I think, because it's like cutting from the educational, like study abroad sort of programs isn't going to have any like material change in the war. But it's going to show, like I said, that they don't support what's happening. And that's, if that happens in droves, it puts a lot of pressure into the government in Israel. Condemn it, another thing that puts pressure, that one I think puts more pressure on the U.S. government in showing that people don't support what's happening there either. But this time it's a domestic pressure. And so showing that universities across the campus are condemning what's happening. Meanwhile, many of the politicians in the United States are supporting what's happening, saying that it's necessary. Still, now, they're still saying that it's necessary, and there's still plenty of people. I mean, Joe Biden, still supportive of Israel, has not said anything about it. Even Bernie Sanders, in the beginning, he only recently changed his opinion once he saw all the carnage. And most politicians don't care about it. And so that would show them that people care, and when they know really that people care is when things will change in America, at least. Whenever I heard those demands, the first thought in my head is like, okay, this isn't happening, so they're here to get arrested. And I just didn't see an encampment protest being able to get so much done. And so my immediate thought is like, this is a protest, not for show, but to draw attention. I think a lot of these demands can be met. It's just that now, as it stands, universities are not in a place where they want to do any of this stuff. I think if the pressure is kept up and these protesters truly don't give up until their demands are met like they say they want to, then I think that these things can happen. And I think that's another goal of these protests, is just to make them not forget it, to make them understand what's happening. Yet again, though, the media is not portraying these protests in the best way most of the time. A lot of them are just portraying it still is like, you know, dumb young kids just doing what kids do or something. Or maybe they're saying they're violent, maybe they're saying they're this or that. And then the normal common person, they see all that and then they take that to heart and then they don't change their mind. And that's what they take and they keep going. And then it devalues the message of the protest. It devalues the goals of the protesters, and then nothing gets done. And so I think it's very important to cover it in an accurate way. It's why I pushed back on their email in the article I wrote by my own experience. From what I saw, I just didn't see what happened in that email as being true. And I don't think that, I worried I may have been editorializing, but then I thought about it and I thought, it's the truth. It was the truth of what I saw, and it's them attempting to change the narrative. I forget which one of you said it earlier when you said it, like, it was a sad, grim day. I think it was you when they said they highlighted the police injuries over the protester, possible injuries, that they were trying to change the narrative into something like that. And it's true. That's what they're trying to do. If they succeed in doing that, it will devalue all of the bravery of these protesters to stand up to the police, to stand up to people calling them murderers and traitors and terrorists, and to put their future on the line for people they'll never see, but for people that they know are suffering. And I just hope that doesn't happen.
Prior to, like, the police presence at a lot of the protests that I've seen, they've been musical and joyful. And, I mean, there's chanting, there's, like, singing. I think it's just, like, beautiful to see people get together and set up tents together and sing and, you know, feel for hurting communities, and just to watch that become something else. Mm-hmm. It's strange to watch the narrative shift.
And it's also, like, protesting on college campuses is, like, nothing new at all.
No.
I feel like when I was, like, growing up and I would, like, think about college, you kind of, like, picture people in tents, like, on the quad protesting stuff. So it's weird that, like, they're trying so hard to villainize it now when, like, in the, I don't know, 60s, 70s, like, they were doing it too, you know?
Right. It's no different.
Yeah. I saw with Columbia, apparently Columbia, like, it touts a proud history of having protesters in the 60s. Because, and like, apparently they had some in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And then, you know, every time it's current, it's always getting pushback from the administration. But then in the future, the administration is like, yeah, you know, we were proud to have had all these people out doing the right thing. And then that's just the case in general. Like, there's always, like, a reactionary pushback against modern movements, and that's always the case in any movement. There's always the pushback, and it's just because there's just subsets of people that don't want to be right, or they don't want change. And in Colombia, they don't want people to be protesting because it makes them look bad.
Mm-hmm.
But in a few years, once all this is done and said and over, and there's books written about it, and there's people that have lived through it and died through it, they'll look back and they'll say, hey, we had this protest where they took over the Hamilton Hall again and renamed it, I think, Hinks Hall, after a dead Palestinian child. And it's like, isn't that great that we had this happen? And it's just every time it happens, it's always the worst thing. And then after time passes, it's the best thing.
And that's crazy, because the institution has so much power, especially Colombia, if they have this whole history. And if they were to take a stance, if they were to choose something and to do something about it, I feel like a lot of universities would follow in their footsteps.
Right.
I guess nobody wants to be the first.
I think, like I said before, is that they're just I don't know if they're afraid. A lot of these, like, programs, they don't want to divest from because they make so much money from them. And it gives them a lot more power as an institution. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, like, the BDS list. I think it's called BDS, right? Boycott, divest, sanction list. It's, like, stuff you're supposed to not buy and stuff you're supposed to boycott that supports Israel. And, like, it's like Coca-Cola, McDonald's, like, all of these mainstays in American society support Israel. And when you are making money as an institution, especially a private institution, like I think Columbia is, well, it's an Ivy League, so I'm pretty sure it's private. When you're making all this from all these big companies, you don't want to get rid of them. You don't want to divest from them. That's the reason why I think that they just don't want to do anything, is they're just afraid to lose that money.
On a good note, SIUE is sponsored by Pepsi, not Coca-Cola.
Yeah, SLUE is like the most progressive university in the country right now. Isn't
oh
it?
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome? People, I mean, people still go to McDonald's. People still go to Starbucks. It's hard to get people to really care about not spending money at these things that they spent money at their entire lives. It's like people are still just going to buy a Big Mac. A thing I like about these protests is that they're focusing on institutions with real, tangible power, like right. a campus, mm-hmm. especially these private campuses where they make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets things done in America.
I think we need to plug places to donate.
I'd say, you know, you can donate. Of course, to Palestine, people, victims in it, survivors as well, just donate to support them, but also just go forward. I don't want to say like with an open mind or anything, but like go forward understanding that these people are not doing this out of any sort of hatred. And you will understand that if you go to any of these protests. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's all full of people enjoying music, enjoying each other, having fun. But also there for a purpose, there for a message, and they're very serious about this message.
Yeah,
they're all there
like,
together.
No matter how much it looks like they're there out of anger and frustration, at the core of it is love.